You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome back to Simply Syria. Lots to discuss. It's our first show of the season. I'm joined by my usual panel of Tommy Milanese and Vittorio Campanile. Stay tuned, subscribe, like, share. You know the drill by now. Hello, good evening, and welcome back to Simply Syria, the Italian football podcast, brought to you by Sofa Sports Media. As ever, I'm joined by my two fantastic panelists, starting with Vittorio Campanile, fresh off a derby della Capitale. Vittorio, welcome back to the show, mate. How was your summer?
It was great. Thanks, Harry. I hope you had a great summer too. And yeah, we're going to talk about the derby. Not very happy, but we're going to talk about it.
We still have to talk about it. And also joining me is the brilliant Tommy Milanese of 90 Min. Tom, thank you so much for joining us, because I know you're on holiday. You're back in Italy at the moment, but such is his commitment to the podcast, he's still with us. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, good, man. Yeah, I'm back in Italy in the room where I was born and I grew up. But yeah, I couldn't miss the first episode, you know. I had to be there.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you to Vittorio, of course. Thank you to you both for agreeing to continue with this project. We started this podcast, I think it was midway through last season. We've done about 10 or 12 episodes, if I'm not mistaken. Pilot, of course. And everything went brilliantly well. You guys are enjoying it. We're loving interacting with you. So we're picking it up again for this new season. Now, we're going to start off with the thriller in Turin. It was Juventus 4, Napoli 3. Of course, Maurizio Sarri still under the weather. He wasn't allowed on the touchline, but that didn't stop his Juventus side getting off to a brilliant start, did it, Vittorio?
It was a very curious match, Harry, because, you know, 3-0 up Juventus, you thought it was over, you know, match finish. And then suddenly Napoli score, and after 10 minutes, 15 minutes, it was 3-0. It was simply unbelievable. We have to say that in the first half, you were played very, very well, while Napoli struggled a lot. And I was a little bit surprised, because you would expect that Juventus were struggling, because it's a completely new team, right? There is a new manager, Sarri, that it's completely different football compared to the Allegri type of football. And instead, you played very, very well. I thought at the they thought it was finished pretty much at the third goal, and this gave Napoli a chance. And Napoli was really good to get back on track and score three goals in like 15 minutes. It's unbelievable against Juventus. I mean, against a Max Allegri team, it would never happen. And with Maurizio Sarri instead, it happened. And I thought it was over. And then at the very last second, the own goal of Koulibaly, that was unexpected. And yeah, great match, great performance. And it's very bizarre, because Serie A this year, they're scoring a lot of goals. It's like a little bit Premier League football now, and this is quite surprising. I think, and I don't know if Tommy agree with me, I think it's because it's very early in the season and there are a lot of big match in August, which is quite surprising, very unusual for the Italian football. And then this maybe it's the reason why we are seeing so many goals.
What do you think, Tommy? I mean, from a Napoli perspective, having done all the hard work to get back into the game, to lose it the way they did must have been a real sickener. Have we lost Tommy? It looks like we've lost Tommy's audio. Vittoria, I'll come back to you then until we can get Tommy back on the line. Problem with live streams, unfortunately, but it is just one of those things. Vittorio, Napoli must have felt absolutely awful. I mean, to lose it the way they did, Koulibaly, normally so reliable, but there were signs, weren't there, that he perhaps wasn't at his best. He was turned by Higuain brilliantly, I thought, for his goal as well. Are we seeing signs that maybe Koulibaly is still a little bit rusty?
Well, the goal of Higuain was unbelievable, was fantastic. But we have to admit that everybody, some will say, hey, Napoli has an amazing defense, probably the best in Italy, because they bought even Manolas. So you think you put Koulibaly near Manolas, they have the best defense. Let's not forget they have Meret on goal, who is one of the best Italian goalkeeper. And instead, in two matches, Napoli allowed already many goals, right? Four goals before, three against Fiorentina, four now. So, something is not working. I think the problem is the mentally aspect. Manolas is a very good defender, but tends to, sometimes don't think what he's doing during the match. He forgets his man and things like that, makes silly mistakes. And Koulibaly did the same thing last Saturday. So, yeah, I don't think he's going down. I think he's still one of the best defender, but Napoli have to be a little bit more careful and didn't do in these matches. And it's unfortunately because at that point, I really felt that Napoli could win it because you could feel that Juventus were really, really tired. De Ligt had a problem and you can see that he wasn't running very well. Bonucci is not at the level we saw him a couple of years ago. So at that point, I thought Napoli was the favorite to win the match. So I was a little bit surprised to see Napoli lose it like that.
Tommy, everybody was talking about De Ligt, what a great signing he was for Juventus. He hasn't really started his Juventus career the way he would have liked, though, has he?
Definitely not. First of all, apologize for going off. Wi-Fi here in Italy is not as good as in UK. But anyway, about the lead, yeah, I think he had an awful performance. And I thought that even before the mistake he did, that the lead for the third goal of Napoli. It's a bit of a shame for him, but he did. It really looks like he's taking his time to kind of adapt to the new country, new league, new football. And he said it a few times already. And if you see a player saying it like a couple times in different interviews that it's difficult for him, that it's taking time for him, you really see the struggle. And I mean, it's very easy to say that a player is incredible after one good season. I'm not saying he's not. He definitely has a lot of talent, but he also needs a few years to improve, and he does need to train with very good players, very good defenders to improve and kind of reach Juventus levels. That could have happened with Chiellini. Unfortunately, he got injured. I mean, luckily because now he gets to play, but unfortunately because I'm sure the training with him would have helped him a lot. While Bonucci, I'm not a big fan of Bonucci. I think he's a good second defender. Like he's good with Chiellini, but if he needs to be the leader and the lead needs to be kind of the second defender, kind of learning from him, then there could be troubles for Juventus. And that's why yesterday, in the last day of the transfer market, they were desperately looking for a defender. They talked about Umtiti, Boateng, and a few others, even Benatia, like comeback of Benatia, but they didn't get to buy anyone. So that would be very interesting.
They even talked about, well, there were rumours anyway, about Shkodran Mustafi of Arsenal.
Yeah.
That
tells you how desperate they are.
Harry, one thing very important is Italian football, Serie A, is not the best league in the world, but on the defensive side, it's very, very difficult to learn it. If you come from abroad, Italian defenders have to be very careful in movement, tactics and things like that. And you can see all the time from defenders coming from abroad. I think about De Vrij coming to Lazio. The first 4 months for De Vrij were very difficult. You're going to see Godin doing the same thing with Inter. You see the league doing the same thing with Juventus. If you come from abroad, it's completely different football. in Italy, you have to be very careful, your position, your movement, especially if you're a defender. So you're going to see the league struggle as all the other great defenders that came to Italian football, because it's completely different. If you add to this that, you know, in Netherlands, football, defensive football is not as complicated as the Italian one, you can understand why, especially a youngster like De Ligt, will struggle a lot to play at his level. And he has to be very careful, because he has to be calm and relaxed and don't, you know, get frustrated because he's playing poorly, because otherwise it's going to be a nightmare for him, his trip in Italy.
Yeah, he's got to keep calm, keep doing what he's done so well over the last couple of seasons or so. And I'm sure that he'll come good eventually. There's no doubt that there is, of course, potential there. But Tommy, this kind of game is the kind of game that I really enjoy, not because I like to see such poor defense. I like to see great attacking football. I don't like seeing poor defensive play and things like that. But it does kind of go a long way in stopping those boring old rumours that go around in England where people go, Serie A's boring. It's absolutely not boring. That was an absolute thriller between two sides that many think will contest the Scudetto. I know it's very early days, but do you think that Napoli will be right up there come the end of the season?
Well, for this season, it will definitely be harder for Napoli to be up there, because I think the level of the whole Serie A is higher than it used to be. And I think every year is getting higher and higher. For example, this year, of course, Inter is one of the contestants for the Scudetto. With Conte, they can definitely battle for it. While for a few years, it was only Juventus and Napoli, and they knew they were not going to win it. So they knew they had a second spot already booked for them. This year is not as easy. Because again, Inter is very good, but even the teams below them, like Lazio and Atalanta, and maybe not so much Roma, but there's a lot. The level is higher, so for Napoli, I think they're going to struggle a lot. But at the same time, they go better with the transfer market. Like Vittorio was saying, Manolas is a great defender. Then as soon as he will kind of get used to playing with Napoli and Koulibaly, I'm sure they will do amazing. Forward, they call Lozano, which is incredible jolly. Like, he can play as a forward. Of course, his role is a left winger, but he can play as a forward as well. He can come in like he did with Juve and score a goal when they need it. And they have depth in midfield with the formation that he's playing. So I think Napoli is improved from last year, but at the same time, it's gonna struggle a bit more to kind of stay up there. And I don't see them really winning the Scudetto. I think if they do, it would be a shocker, at least to me. But definitely, and that game was incredible. And the thing that they're scoring so many goals now, like, again, it really shows that the level of Serie A is go higher. And if that game taught us something, is that Juventus is not as unbeatable as it was in the past 7 years. And so that will definitely make the league very interesting, and could be the first time in a long time that the Juve doesn't win it. And that will definitely help internationally for people to get interested in Serie A.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let's move on to another game, another big game. So early on in the season, the Derby della Capitale. Vittorio is a Lazio man. Vittorio, I've seen the highlights back since we last spoke. I didn't get to watch that game live. I have watched it back now. My word, Lazio were unlucky not to win it, weren't they?
Yeah, unfortunately. Lazio played really, really well. Hit the post 4 times. I thought it was a record in Serie A. I think Inter once hit 5 times the post in a match, so it wasn't the record of Serie A. But yes, Lazio had so many chances. I think in the end was 13-4 for Lazio. So, you know, you should expect Lazio to win it, but you have to be careful when you're playing against Roma. Roma didn't play that well, but they got a penalty, a silly mistake of Milinkovic-Savic. We know the handball rules have changed, so you have to be really, really careful. And he wasn't, so Roma got the lead. Then Zaniolo got a couple of good chances. He hit the post twice. But after that, in the second half, I thought Lazio dominated the match and should have won it. You know, you can see it in two ways. One is the positive one for Lazio, and saying Lazio's playing really great football. They beat Sampdoria. They played really, really well against Roma. So, you know, you should think Lazio's playing great football. They are the favorite for the Champions League spot, etc. But you could see it also in the negative way and say, if you're playing that well, that great football, and you don't win it, then this is a problem, because you cannot expect to play all season long like that. And what's going to happen when you're going to play poorly? You're going to lose badly, and you need to be consistent if you want to go to the Champions League. And this is my you know, Lazio has to start winning match when they play that well. And this is a problem. It's good that they didn't sell the top players. You know, Milinkovic-Savic has been linked to pretty much all European club. Luis Alberto was linked with Sevilla. So I think the quality of Lazio is still there. And probably, I think the midfield of Lazio is probably one of the best after Inter and Juventus. So they have a big team. Now they have to show it and win the biggest matches like the derby.
Tommy, do you think that Roma could struggle this season? They've had a bit of a strange summer, haven't they? Of course, Manolas has gone to Napoli. They've managed to bring in Mkhitaryan from Arsenal, a player that wasn't exactly flavour of the month at the Emirates. So it'll be interesting to see how he does over in Rome. You know, Patrick Schick's gone out. They brought in another forward, didn't they? God, it's
Kalinic, yeah.
Kalinic, that's it. A player who spent some time in the Premier League in the past and was a complete flop. But it seems a little bit strange at Roma. I'm not overly hopeful that they'll do anything special this season. What are your feelings on? I know it's really difficult to say just two games into the season, but in terms of their transfer window and the outlook, how are you feeling about Roma at the minute?
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't really see Roma battling for the Champions League spot. I mean, I know it's very early, so things can literally change within a couple of months. But as things are now, there's a lot more teams that look much more fit physically and mentally. And Roma's played two games. The first one with Genoa. I mean, Genoa is a very good team this year. They're going to do well. But at the same time, Roma is playing at home, and they were supposed to win that. But not only they draw, but they also conceded three goals. And that shows that they didn't really fix their problems in defense. I mean, last year, they were blaming it on Olsen, the goalkeeper, which this year they just gave to Cagliari. They bought a new goalkeeper, Paul Lopez. I'm not entirely sure about him as well, but I mean, he will have to show us. They sold Manolas. They and their transfer market, I don't really see it very strongly. Even the fact about Mkhitaryan, like you said, Mkhitaryan is not exactly the best player, like a player that makes the fans excited. And since they let El Shaarawy go, I thought El Shaarawy was one of the best players, if not the best player last season, together with Zaniolo and maybe Kolarov. And Dzeko, of course. So they let him go quite easily. I don't know if it was a choice of the player of if just Roma wanted to cash in. And they just replaced him now with Mkhitaryan. And Nikola Kalinic is a player that has done very badly in Milan. He's done very poorly in Atletico Madrid. Basically, he hasn't played. So he hasn't really played constantly for a team in a long time. And he's definitely not the kind of player that that would save Roma. So I don't really rate the transfer market. I don't think they got much stronger. Paul Fonseca as well could be a surprise, but it's not. He hasn't really proved himself that much, and I think he's going to struggle as well in his first season in Italy. And that kind of links to what Vittorio said before, that Italy is very, there's a lot of tactics is such an important thing in Italy. So I think Paul Fonseca is going to struggle in his first season. I don't think they can aim more than a Europa League spot. But again, it's very early in the season, and if we can change, they could bring new players in January or new manager, or maybe Fonseca will just become a tactic magician in the future. But this is what I'm seeing for now.
You know what about Roma transfer market? And I don't know if you agree with me. It looks like they are buying just to buy. Okay, we sold Schick, that was terrible. We're going to buy Kalinic. But Kalinic, as Tommy was saying, had three bad season. Why do you get Kalinic? Do I need a striker? Okay, let's go and get someone better, you know, Petagna, someone else. Mkhitaryan, why did you buy Mkhitaryan? Mkhitaryan will play in the position of Zaniolo probably, right? But Zaniolo is your best player. So you're going to move Zaniolo to a side, left or right, or Mkhitaryan to a side. Then where does Ander and Kluivert goes? You needed a central defender, a very good central defender, to replace Manolas. You got Smalling. Are you convinced that he's the right man? I don't think so. Mancini from Atalanta, he's young, but he hasn't proved nothing. I don't know. It looks like Roma was buying players just, hey, guys, we have to buy this couple of players. While, for example, Inter bought the players they need, you know. They bought Sensi, that is a very interesting player. They said, we don't need Icardi, we want a striker. Conte said, you know, I loved Lukaku, and they got Lukaku. You have to have a project in the summer transfer, and I don't think Roma had it. I don't know if it's only my impression, but yeah.
Yeah, but I'm wondering if this is down to Paulo Fonseca then? Is it him that doesn't really have a clear plan, or is it the club that didn't really listen to him and just go whether they thought was going to be a good idea or a good value for money? Well, we don't know that, of course.
And we know that Monchi left a terrible situation money-wise, so that's why they had to take on loan Mkhitaryan, Smalling, etc. But probably they could have done, you know, Rugani, Juventus wanted to get rid of Rugani. Now, I don't think Rugani is a top defender, but probably it would have been better for, instead of taking Smalling, who has to come to Italy, get used to Italian football, as we said about the league, and he's not ready probably for the first couple of months. So why don't you go to Juventus and take on loan Rugani? Why don't you take Mandzukic instead of Kalinic?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, good point. Great point.
I wish Mandzukic could have come to Lazio, but the salary is far too high for Lotito. But, you know, Mandzukic would have been a great player for Roma.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was quite close to Genoa as well on the last day. So if Juve was, if Juve was happy to go to sell Mandzukic to Genoa, he would have definitely be happy to go to Roma. So yeah, that's a good point.
Definitely some great points there, guys. Right, let's quickly round up the rest of the results in Serie A. We've got a couple more bits and pieces to talk about, so we'll get to those in just a moment. But let's have a look at the week two results. Atalanta, of course, in the Champions League this season, 2, Torino 3, Bologna 1, Spal 0, Cagliari 1, Inter 2. We'll come on to talk about that game in a minute. Genoa 2, Fiorentina 1, Juve 4, Napoli 3, Lazio 1, Roma 1, as we've already discussed. New Boys Lecce 0, Verona 1, Milan 1, Brescia 0, Calhanoglu with a goal there. Sassuolo 4, Sampdoria 1, Tommy won't want to hear that. And Udinese 1, Parma 3, Jovinio at his brilliant best again. A lot of results there that we can touch on, but I want to start by talking about the Inter game. They went away to Cagliari, got the points, but the game has once again been overshadowed by what appeared or sounded like racist chants in the crowd. Now, Tommy, this is something that keeps on happening in Serie A, and, you know, the world is watching. People are condemning the behaviour of these fans. It keeps on happening. But what I'm most surprised about with this whole situation, you know, I think everybody understands that this is completely wrong and completely out of order. But the biggest shock to me has come from a letter that the Curva Nord, have you seen it, have put out to Romelu Lukaku. I'm just going to read you some points from it. They say, the Curva Nord. They say, "Hi, Romelu, we are writing to you on behalf of Curva Nord. Yes, the guys who welcomed you at your arrival in Milan. We are really sorry you thought that what happened in Cagliari was racist. You have to understand that Italy is not like many other North European countries where racism is a real problem." What on earth are they talking about? If that's not racism, what is it?
I think it was definitely racism. If you see on TV, maybe it doesn't really sound like it, because there's a lot of people that just kind of booing, which, I mean, is something you can do to any player. That's not racism. But there's a video that is been going on the internet, like a fan-made video inside the bit where the fans are. And you can clearly hear like a sort of a monkey gorilla sound. So that's definitely racism. And I mean, I think it's obvious to say that it's ridiculous. And what shooked me that it's not the first time that happens, but especially it's not the first time that happens at Cagliari. I think almost every year something happened. It was Matuidi last year. Then there was, don't remember now, but it happened four times in the same. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So it happened a few more times. So there's not, I think it's a problem that it's impossible to solve at 100%. I think 99% of the people are fine with it. I don't want people to think that people are racist in Italy, because they're not, but there will always be a couple of people. All it takes is four people that very loud, they just, you know, they make themselves here, and then maybe someone else will follow, you know, maybe someone thinks it's funny, someone thinks they'll never get caught, and now the whole you know Cagliari fans are seeing badly probably. Now next time there's going to be a game of Cagliari is going to be you know an African player or whatever, then you know people are going to start thinking, ooh, is anything going to happen now? So what to do about it? I think there's no real solution. What you can do is kind of to teach to the younger fans, the kids, that is not right. You know that the players are humans. They you know they get offended. Of course, it's horrible what they're doing to him. That's abuse, and they shouldn't do it. And that's not right. And hopefully the new generation will kind of you know bring a new fresh air into the stadiums in the future.
Absolutely. And this Vittorio, before you come in, this is not a problem exclusive to Italy. This is a problem everywhere. It's happened in the UK as well. It happened on various occasions last season. We heard just a few days ago that Kurt Zouma of Chelsea was getting racial abuse via social media. So this is not a problem just in Italy, but we're talking about it because we're covering Italian football, and so it needs to be discussed. Vittorio, your
yeah,
take on
the problem is it's not acceptable that in 2019 you cannot find who these guys are, because you have camera everywhere. It's not possible. This is the biggest problem. Because they do it because they know that no one will find it and no one will do nothing because they're not able to catch them. And so they're going to repeat it. And as Tommy said, it's not all the curva. It's four or five people close to the stand shouting this. It's not acceptable that the police in Italy is not able to find them, grab them, and you know prohibit them to get to the stadium forever. And if you start doing like this, then you'll see that people will stop because, hey, they got them. So they're not going to the match anymore. So maybe I'm not going to chant anymore. I'm going to be quiet and not do these stupid things. This is the problem. In Italy, people do it because they say they're never going to catch me. So, yeah, I'm going to take the risk and, you know, probably I'm going to be fine. This is the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with you. They need to be able to identify these people and you know, pull them out of the stadiums. It's not on. Talking about the football side, though, let's talk about Inter for a little bit. I think that, you know, we've spoken in the past about the fact that, you know, in our WhatsApp group that we feel that maybe Inter can push Juve this season. Antonio Conte's gone in there, a manager that is very highly rated. Romelu Lukaku's come in. I think he will score goals in Italy. Tommy, what do you make of the Alexis Sanchez signing? Because as an Arsenal fan, like I am, I saw the very, very best of Alexis Sanchez. And despite the bad time he had at Manchester United, I firmly believe that there is still a very good player there. And he can, you know, really take things on and get back to his very best. And of course, Inter have got rid of a problem player in Mauro Icardi, a great player, but he was certainly an issue last season. We were discussing him and that situation on pretty much every show that we did. So, I mean, Tommy, your take first on Alexis Sanchez, and then Inter should be pleased that Mauro's gone, shouldn't they?
Well, about Alexis Sanchez, I personally love the player. I think he's incredible. And a lot of people, you know, say that you're as good as your last game. So a lot of people have a horrible thought of Alexis Sanchez, like a, you know, awful player, awful first start, whatever they say. But that's wrong, because if you look back in his career at Udinese, it was unbelievable. Barcelona, it was amazing. And Arsenal was probably his top. And then all he did is fill 1 year and a half at Man United. But I mean, I'd like to say there was a Man United that we all know they had problems, a lot of problems. There's not him, definitely. So he just found himself in the wrong situation with a manager like Mourinho that, well, you know, he's a great manager. I love him. But sometimes with the wingers, he kind of plays them a bit out of position, maybe something, you know, whatever it was. It happens to a player. It can happen to any player, even to the strongest. That if you're in the wrong situation, you know, there's things around you that you don't like, you can fail, and that's what happened to him. And Man United again has a lot of problems that he couldn't solve on his own. So he failed in his careers 1 year and a half, 1 season and a half. I think it's very unfair. You know, a lot of hate he gets on Twitter and all the other social media platform. I think he's still a great player, and I think Conte is the perfect man to kind of unlock him again and kind of bring him back to his potential. Again, when it was in Italy the last time, in Udinese, he was absolutely incredible. I remember that time he scored four goals away at Palermo with Di Natale. amazing. And again, back then he used to Udinese used to play a bit like Inter does now, so with two strikers up front, Di Natale and Alexis again. So I think he will find it quite nicely to play there, and I think he will do good. The question is though, is how much is he going to play? Because of course Lukaku, you know, you can't take him off. He's the main guy of this Juve Inter. But the other guy is Lautaro Martinez, and he played very well last season. He played a decent Copa America, and he's in great form. He scored last game as well, and I think he's a great player that he should deserve a lot of chances. But there's only space for two then. And I mean, I know that Inter has the Champions League and the Coppa Italia, so there will definitely be chances for everyone. But when it comes to big games like the derby or the game against Juve, who's going to start? I mean, of course, now it's Lautaro because Alexis, you know, needs time to adjust. But when they're both fit, both at the same level, who's going to start? I don't know that, and that would be very interesting. About Icardi, well, oh, go on, mate.
Sorry, I was just going to say, it's very interesting, actually, that Lukaku and Sanchez have gone to the same club, because they are two players that felt that they were being victimized unfairly at Manchester United. They were both, you know, really supportive of each other. I think them two and Pogba, you know, are always talking about how they've been scapegoated. Lukaku made the comments since he left that him and Sanchez were always picked on. So, you know, there is a relationship there as well, and that could turn into a very interesting partnership. But go on, mate. Sorry, you're on Icardi.
Yeah, and last thing about that, that's exactly what they needed. They need a fresh start in a club like Inter, who is having themselves a fresh start with Conte and all the changes they're making. So I think it's great for them, great move. And I mean, such a good deal for Inter as well, since Man United is still going to pay, what, 6-7 million a year. And so definitely a great deal for Inter. About Icardi, yeah, very quickly, we all know what happened. We all know that it was a problem for Inter. And what's great about Conte, I love Conte absolutely, both on the pitch and off the pitch. And the first thing he said when he came is like, I want to get rid of this and that, Perisic, Nainggolan and Icardi. And it's incredible how he managed to do all of it. And I mean, that really shows that the club and Marotta, which is the director of Inter, that they're really behind him and they're really supportive. So they bought who he wanted and they got rid of who he wanted. So they literally did everything he wanted. So now Conte really doesn't really have excuses to perform.
The ball's in his court now, isn't it, Vittorio? What your thoughts on the Sanchez and Icardi sort of incoming and obviously, well, Icardi leaving?
The thing is, in football, especially in these top leagues, it's not only the talent that allows you to win the championship or titles, etc. You need even a group of players. And, you know, we knew that Icardi wasn't a captain, wasn't someone who could bring the team together. Same thing with Nainggolan. He's a terrific midfielder. Probably a couple of years ago was the best in Europe, but he didn't win nothing because he had problem. He's not a very professional player like Icardi, like Perisic, etc. So last year, Inter tried with the talent of these players and failed. Conte, that has big experience, that is a great motivator, said, no, these players, we don't need it. We need maybe less quality, but we need a team. And that's what's happening. So that's great. Lukaku, I think, is the perfect fit for Inter. We have to see Sanchez, how he comes to Italy. Obviously, he has a chip on his shoulder. He wants to prove everybody wrong. We have to see how he will perform. If he's still the Sanchez that we all remember, as Tommy was saying, at Udinese, he was unbelievable. I never saw a striker like that. You know, him and Di Natale was astonishing. Is he still at that same level? I don't know. I'm not sure. The other thing is, we see Juventus with Sarri, we see Gianpaolo to Milan, Inzaghi to Lazio, Fonseca to Roma. They are all very offensive mind football coach. Conte is not that type of football. So, you know, strikers with Conte will struggle a little bit because he thinks first thing is defense and then the rest. So that's not great for attackers, for strikers, but so it's going to be important. I mean, against Cagliari, Inter didn't play that well, but they win. This is Antonio Conte football. So I think Juventus a little bit a higher level than Juventus. But as we were talking before about Napoli, I think Inter is right behind Juventus and Napoli is third at the moment for me.
Yeah, interesting. I agree with that. I think that they will be Juventus's closest competitors. I'm still going to need some convincing that Inter are ready to win this Scudetto. But as it stands, I think you're absolutely right. I think Inter are the best placed to mount a serious challenge, of course. Now, Milan got off to, they finally registered a win. I know it's only two games in, but they got their points, and that will be massive for them in terms of confidence. Tommy, how do you think they're going to do under Gianpaolo? It's Milan are a strange one because I think we all agreed last season that Gattuso was not necessarily the right man to take them forward. You know, he'd done okay. He came in and he'd done a bit of a job and, you know, steadied the ship a little bit, brought spirit, hard work. But is Gianpaolo the man to take them to the next level, in your opinion? Is he a level above Gennaro Gattuso in terms of tactics and as a manager?
I don't know if he's a level above. It's definitely something very different. And one thing about Gianpaolo, he's not that manager like Conte that will come and change things suddenly. Gianpaolo is definitely a bit of a long-term kind of situation because we said that in Italy there's a lot of tactics. Gianpaolo is beyond that. Like, his tactics is ridiculous. Like, all the players of Sampdoria, because he was manager of Sampdoria for 3 years, they all said that with Gianpaolo, they literally had to learn the movements by heart. They were moving like the back four. They were moving as one man. And even with us, it took a bit for the defenders to kind of understand that and stuff. So I think for Milan, it would take a while. If not a while, but it would take a bit. Want to be an immediate change, immediate solution, and also by his formation, he is 1-2 4-3-1-2, so kind of a CIM, so a trequartista, we say it, an attacking midfielder behind the two strikers. So that was his formation. But he said after first game when they lost to Udinese that the players that he has that don't fit his formation, which I found quite weird, because he had the whole summer to try them and to ask for new players, and I don't know if he has, but definitely no one really came that fit his formation. So he tried it in the first game and it didn't work. They lost good against Udinese and they played poorly. In the second game, then he changed something. Instead of playing without one attacking midfield and two strikers, he did the opposite. So two attacking midfielders and one striker, because he said that Piontek is a kind of striker that he needs to be the only striker, basically. So he was playing a 4-3-3 last year, so that kind of player. Now they bought Rebic the last day yesterday. I think Rebic is an interesting player because he can play both as a winger but also as an attacking midfielder, so that would fit in the 4-3-2-1. But again, there's a lot of tactics involved there. There's a lot of change for the players, which they were used to play with a 4-3-3 for a few years. So there's a lot of change there. There's no great names that came in, only a couple okay players here and there. So I think for Gianpaolo to put his philosophy into the team, it would take a bit. It would take a bit. So I don't really see them challenging for Champions League spot this year. They might next year if Gianpaolo is still there. If the club and the fans are patient enough, I think he might be able to kind of create a new era in Milan, a new philosophy. But I don't know if they're that patient up there, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, Vittorio. You were not Gattuso's biggest fan. And you got into many debates on this show in regards to that. Your take on it, is Gianpaolo an upgrade in your view? And how do you see Milan progressing under him? And I know it's so early and it's so hard to make definitive predictions at this point in the season. But in terms of your general feeling, when you heard that Gianpaolo was going to be the man going in there, were you optimistic for Milan?
Well, as Tommy said, I think in certain way it's an upgrade compared to Gattuso. The thing that concerned me is like Italian press took this change. I mean, Gianpaolo for a moment was like Arrigo Sacchi, and I thought there are big difference. You know, Gianpaolo did well, but as Tommy can confirm, Sampdoria didn't do that great. You know, last year, Quagliarella was scoring even when he was dreaming or when he was at the beach, and still Sampdoria didn't reach the Champions League. So, you know, if you are not able to reach the Champions League or the Europa League with a striker that scores every match in every occasion, how can you say that manager did a great job? I don't think so. And the transfer market Milan did was very similar to the Roma one. It didn't have an idea behind. you take Giampaolo, who loves a trequartista, and you don't buy a trequartista. There are a lot of holes there. And if Piontek stops scoring, then, you know, it can turn into a disaster. And I don't think Giampaolo is a messiah. He's a very good manager, but he's not Arrigo Sacchi. At least he's not there yet. People will say, yeah, Sarri, when he came from Napoli, he was coming from Empoli. But he did a miracle with Empoli, keep them in the Serie A and so on. So I don't know. I'm not convinced by Giampaolo. Obviously, he's a better manager than Gattuso, but I'm not sure Milan is at that level. The thing is, as Tommy was saying, Roma is not at that level. Milan is not at that level. Atalanta has the Champions League. Lazio, I think, has weaknesses. Who's favorite for the fourth spot at this moment? Because all the teams are not complete, are not above the others, I think. So it's going to be an interesting fight for teams that are not perfect.
Absolutely, absolutely. Very interesting indeed. Tommy, the last team I want to touch on this week is your team, Sampdoria, sitting in a very worrying position, third from bottom at the moment, haven't picked up a point yet. What's the general feeling amongst Sampdoria supporters? I wanted to ask you as well, because I watched the highlights of their game. The stadium was completely empty, wasn't it? Is there a reason for that, or...?
Well, we were playing away. Are you talking about the last one, the last game?
Oh, was it away?
If it's the last game, we were playing away. We actually brought quite a few fans. So we did a bit of a thing. So we had, I think the fans are there. That's the only thing is going well, actually. The first game with Lazio, the stadium was, I mean, there was one bit of the stadium that was under construction. But beside that, it was fairly full. So what's going on, Sampdoria? Like, I'm sure both of you know, but I'm just going to say, for those of the listener who doesn't know, we're going through a transition moment. So the club is being sold, basically. It's not going to be official, though, until October. So our owner, Ferrero, sold the club to an American fund with Gianluca Vialli, which is going to be the president, so the main man, so the guy who's going to speak to the press and stuff like that. But it's not... these contracts are not going to be deposited until at least end of September or October. So what happened? The previous owner sold the best players, which is Dennis Pride, Andersen, and we got the Frel goal. We could have got him back, but we didn't. So we sold our best players. We didn't replace them with anyone. We didn't buy anyone, basically. We only got a few youngsters here then. And we got Di Francesco as a manager, so with the new formation, and he's been saying the whole summer that he's going to play with the 4-3-3, but he doesn't have the man. But he, you know, the club promised him that they will buy him the players to fit his formation, but they didn't. So Di Francesco is now in a situation where everyone at the club had, you know, they're all thinking about, you know, selling the club, yes or no. We didn't buy any new players. We have a new formation and the players don't fit because, I mean, we don't have a single winger. We bought Rigoni the last day, but I mean, he's an interesting character. So we don't have the players to fit our formation. Everyone's had this turn into the selling of the club. So it's a very tough situation. I'm going to tell you that we're probably going to fight for the relegation spot. And I mean, I don't really see anyone I don't really see anyone that's much worse than us. Maybe Lecce, Verona, but that's it. Because Brescia, I think Brescia, they can do a better job than us, with Balotelli and Donnarumma, Matri. And I struggle to think someone is worse than us. And again, things might change. It's still the beginning, but the defense is looking awful. Di Francesco is playing all the men forward for some reason. I know why, because he wants to play his philosophy. His philosophy is good football on the wings, but he doesn't have the players to do that. So all the players now are forward, but they don't know what to do with the ball. And so we just concede a lot. What we need right now, since it's a moment of troubles, you know, when it's someone that kind of sits deep, when the clubs come from Serie B, that's what they do. They kind of sit deep and they wait for the teams and they kind of play in counter-attack. We kind of need something like that, because that's the reality of things. We're going to fight for relegation. There's no time to play beautiful football with players that we don't have. So this is the situation. So it's going to be a long season ahead. We're going to concede ridiculous amounts of goals. It's going to be tough, but hopefully once the club is sold and with the new American fund and Vialli, maybe in January or most likely next year, we're going to buy some fairly good players and everything can start again if we manage to stay up.
Wow, that's a damning view from Tommy there. Vittorio, do you think it's going to be that bad? Do you think Sampdoria will be fighting for their lives in this division this season? I'm really surprised to hear that.
There is this chance. I agree with Tommy saying that Verona Lecce, I saw the match Sunday and it was terrible. So, yeah, they're a very weak team. So you're going to fight for the last spot available. But Di Francesco said something really important after the match lost against Sassuolo. And he said all the distraction about selling the club has distracted not only the club, but also the players. And he feels like the players are very distracted in training, in the match, because, you know, they don't know what is going to happen next week, what's going to happen next month. And the problem is that Ferrero, that is the owner now, in the last 3 weeks or so, have been saying, no, I'm not going to sell the club. It's nothing. It's rubbish. The offer is too low. I want much more money. So instead of sending the message, yes, I'm selling the club, just, you know, wait a couple of weeks, he's sending the opposite message. So the players are not only distracted, but confused. They say, what's going on? You know, everybody's selling, we're selling the club. And the owner said, no, it's not going to happen, etc. So this is a big problem. And you see it all the time when clubs get sold, the performance of the club get a dip. You know, they don't perform as they should. The other thing, Quagliarella is getting older. And, you know, he had a terrific year that's last season. You cannot expect to have it this year. And Di Francesco is a completely different style of football compared to Giampaolo. He sticks with a 4-3-3. And I don't think Sampdoria has those players. Same thing, Quagliarella is not used to playing a three-attacking mind football. So it's tough for Sampdoria. I still think they have quality players, but they have to solve this problem of selling the club. Is it going to be like that? Is it going to be sold? When? Or is Ferrero keeping the team? Then he has to buy players to build a better team, because like that, it's going to be a terrible season.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, the club would definitely be sold. There was, as you know, there was an official statement by both parties that there's an interest, and the new owners have been spotted in the stadium at the training facilities. Some fans talked to them as well. It will definitely happen. It's 99%. I mean, nothing is for sure in life until it's official, but it's 99%. The question is when, because again, this whole thing started, I think, back in May. So it's been a long summer for us. And yeah, again, if we can manage to stay up, then maybe next season we can start again and actually build a competitive team like Atalanta, Torino and all the others. If not, God knows what's going to happen. But yeah, let's stay positive.
Even because Ferrero, we know, is struggling on the financial point of view. So, you know, he's looking for money, and he used in a certain way Sampdoria to get money back. So that's why he's interested in selling the club at the best price possible, because if he gets more money, he's, you know, he needs it. So that's what he's looking for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Let's round off by having a quick look at the table as things stand at the moment. Of course, Inter sit top, Juventus level on points with them, as are Torino in third place. Lazio, of course, Vittorio's boys in fourth. As we've mentioned, Sampdoria struggling early on, sitting at the bottom of the table. Roma and Fiorentina find themselves in 15th and 16th place. But I'm sure we're going to see this change over the course of the season. It is early days. And as we mentioned earlier, as Vittorio mentioned, and there have been some huge clashes already between some of the league's big hitters. So we'll see how that develops. That brings us to the end of this show. It's the first episode of the season. We weren't on last week due to me being on holiday mainly. Vittoria was away as well. Tommy, the poor guy, is giving up his holiday to do this. So a big thank you to Tommy, and a big thank you to every single one of you who has tuned in. As always, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, and most podcast outlets. We're actually on YouTube this time as well, for the first time, where we'll be bringing you video content as well. So hopefully you guys will enjoy that. And Don't forget to leave your comments, hit the like button if you're watching on YouTube, and subscribe to our new channel. We know it's a hard graft building up a YouTube channel. We have got the podcast already, but we're just adding another string to our bow. So please, please do give us your support. Vittorio, do you want to let our listeners know how they can follow you on social media?
Well, you can follow us on follow me on Lazio Lounge, our podcast in English about Lazio, and my YouTube channel, Vittorio Campanile, obviously.
Brilliant stuff. And it is a great channel. And Vittorio's got it all going on with the green screens and everything. It's fantastic.
Oh, that's brilliant.
You have to see my new intro.
Definitely. We'll check it out. And Tommy, do you want to let our listeners know how they can keep up with you as well?
You can find me on my personal account on Twitter, Tommy90min, and all my work at just 90min in all the social medias for all aspects of football, really. And you can see Harry as well, because he's in our squad now.
You made that nice article about Quagliarella as well.
Yeah, I started writing a bit for 90min as well about Italian football. So there'll be a few more coming.
Brilliant stuff. We look forward to reading those. And I'm sure I'll see Tommy soon. Vittorio, we need to get you down to London for sure. We'll go for a nice Italian meal, I think. I do love an arrabbiata, I do. So we'll get that arranged. Until next time, guys, take care, and we'll be back very, very soon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.